Hello, everyone. Welcome to Self-Work. I'm Dr. Margaret. Today, we're talking about the reasons to stop therapy. But first, let's hear from our sponsors. This is Self-Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self-Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. Now, you also might be unhappy with your therapist if you feel like they talk too much about themselves, they don't pay very good attention, they're not on time, whatever it happens to be. It's the therapist's job to create a welcoming environment for you, and if they don't, it's okay to part ways. That's not saying that stopping that work is necessarily easy. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. It's often a very moving moment when you leave therapy. Here's someone that you've trusted and confided in for weeks or months or sometimes even years, and it's time to walk out of their office and do without that resource. Stop something that you found really helpful. That's the way stopping therapy should be. I imagine it's something like an artist deciding when a painting or a piece of music is finished, and it is what it needs to be. So today we're going to be focusing on 7 good reasons to stop therapy. As I like to say, it's my job to do myself out of a job, and I celebrate with people I've worked with when they leave to hopefully use the skills learned and enjoy the feelings of having worked through whatever pain or trauma had been plaguing them. I don't think any of us are ever quote-unquote done. Hopefully there's growth every day. There's curiosity about what life holds next. But sometimes it's time to say goodbye, to end therapy, and to trust yourself. Our listener voicemail this week is kind of different. The listener asked me not to share her actual recording, so of course I didn't. But I thought her question was quite a good one. It's about how to handle your feelings and thoughts if you're a caregiver, but the person you're caring for led a life of self-neglect, which seemed to lead to the illness they have now. There was a catch in her voice as she said, "It's quite hard to hear myself say these words." So I've obviously respected her wish, but we'll talk about the struggles of caregiving in just a bit. Before that, let's hear from our wonderful sponsor. Maybe you want to start therapy in 2025 with BetterHelp. It's a new year. So what might get in your way of making this the year that you ask for help with some problem you're having, feelings that you don't understand, or a conflict that you can't seem to fix? Here's a thought. What if asking for help meant that you wouldn't let anything get in your way of solving an issue, finding out an answer, or discovering a better direction? Asking for help is much more about your determination and your commitment to making your life and the lives of others who love you healthier and more fulfilling, even if it means asking for an outside perspective. BetterHelp, the number one online therapy provider, makes reaching out about as easy as it can get. Within 48 hours, you'll have a professional licensed therapist whom you can text, email, or talk with to guide you. And you're not having to comb through therapist websites or drive to appointments. It's convenient, inexpensive, and readily available. Now you can find a therapist that fits your needs with BetterHelp. And if you use the code or link betterhelp.com/selfwork, you'll get 10% off your first month of sessions. Just do it. You'll be glad you did. That link again is betterhelp.com/selfwork. to get 10% off your first month of services. When I left Dallas to move to Fayetteville, Arkansas, I had a lot of feelings about leaving my therapist there. I felt as if I'd made a lot of progress with him. He'd shepherded me out of my difficulty with getting an emotional divorce, as I like to call it, and into a new marriage and all that that entailed. But now I was leaving. Virtual therapy didn't exist back in the early 90s, so that was going to be that. I remember him asking me, "Margaret, if you thought of a question that you'd ask me or you'd like to ask me, would you be able to think of how I'd answer it?" I thought a minute and said, "Well, yeah, pretty much." So he explained that I'd internalized him, just as you do anyone you've had a relationship with. Sometimes that internalization can bring hurt, like you can't forget or you can still hear someone berating or blaming you. But it can work in a positive way as well, with friends, with parents, and with therapists. Today, I thought it might be helpful to talk about the reasons you might choose for therapy to end, and I chose 7. I'm sure there are more. But unlike what many people think, that therapy has to go on for years and years, that's far from what actually happens. It can last for a long time. It can last for years. Or someone can, over time, enter therapy, leave therapy, and then come back. The last choice is something I've done a lot myself. That if I found someone really helpful to work with, then I'd go back when I hit a rough spot. Sometimes for support, sometimes to help me see a different perspective because I was really stuck in a feeling or thought that wasn't helpful for me. And sometimes to help me see that once again, I was repeating a behavior that was an old and very bad habit. But let's talk about these 7 reasons to stop going to therapy. First, there's the fact that you could be done, at least done with the reason you began therapy in the first place. As I said in the intro, I'm not sure any of us are ever truly done with growth or change. Every year you age, every relationship that you begin or those that you end, every child you parent or love, every job you have, all of those things change you. So how do you know that you're done in therapy? Hopefully, at the beginning, you set some goals and now you realize you have the skills or the emotional stability to meet those goals. At the beginning of therapy, you'd say, I know I'm better when blank, whatever that blank is, those kinds of realizations. And so if you've done that in a very structured way, it can be very helpful for you to know, I've accomplished what I came here to do. Psychologists for years have stressed that therapy techniques are researched and evidence-based. And there's been a great deal of work and research to show that certain techniques, when used well, can be of great help and service to ease or alleviate mental or emotional suffering. So, now you're done. You feel satisfied with your work. You feel you've grown because you can do something or say something or try something that you couldn't before. Maybe saying goodbye to your therapist will be hard. Yet I encourage people who I can see are much better to leave therapy. One of the goals of the therapeutic relationship is this. You try to create a safe, supportive space for your client, but then you guide them to discover other relationships where they can find that kind of support. What happens in therapy, you want to have happen outside of therapy. So a therapist encourages a client to seek to experience what they experienced in therapy again, but with other people. I'm being very general here because the reasons for entering therapy can be incredibly diverse. Maybe you're there because of a divorce, the onset of a disease, other problems in relationships, being diagnosed with bipolar disorder, having depression or anxiety or unresolved trauma, anger management. I could go on and on. And some of these things are managed rather than cured. But as I said in the intro, it's kind of like an artist creating a painting. That artist decides when that painting is finished. It's good for now. You may paint the same scene or figure over and over again, using different strokes or mediums. But for now, this one is done. So sometimes it's time to end therapy. The second reason to end therapy, in my opinion, is if sessions are getting repetitious or they don't seem to, quote unquote, go anywhere. What do I mean by that? You may have gone as far as you can with that therapist. Maybe the therapists themselves have run out of ideas to try or techniques to suggest, or you yourself have gone as far as you really can at this point in your life. So what happens in therapy is that the client tends to bring the same things up rather than being ready to move on to another topic. This is sometimes hard to talk about because you like coming into therapy, but at the same time, you're kind of stuck. Now, that's not your fault. You may not be ready to talk about something that could be a deeper issue. When I run into something like this, because it's kind of a tough conversation to have, I'll invite the client to talk about how they believe they've changed with therapy, and is there anything else they'd like to cover? If they can't state anything or say something like, oh, I still need a place to talk about things, we then talk about how that changes the process of therapy. For some, and people have even laughed and told me this, it can become that the client feels like you're a paid friend. Now, to me, that's a signal that we've come to a stopping place. Being a paid friend is not therapy, or it's not the kind of therapy I enjoy doing or I think I'm good at doing. So the client and I need to talk about where they can find that support and why they're relying on me to provide the time for them to just talk. Again, the focus is what it would be like to leave and then create that kind of relationship with other people. Maybe they're struggling to know how to make friends. So that can become what the therapy morphs into. How do you begin to have friends that you trust and they're not your quote-unquote paid friend? The third reason to stop therapy is when it may be more helpful to do couples work. Or sometimes it's the other way. You're doing couples work, but your therapist suggests that doing some individual work would be helpful. This is usually done by another therapist, because I've learned the hard way that that is definitely the better option. There are therapists, and I used to be one of them, that would do individual work and couples work, but that can really get messy. In couples work, you and your partner can learn better listening and communication skills. You can make healthier attitudes or decisions around parenting or finances or sex. You can work through trust and control struggles, anything and everything that needs attention in your primary relationship. You can also do group or entire family work, so the possibilities are numerous. I do warn about people getting over-therapied, especially if they're in individual and couples or family. That's a lot of therapy. Of course, the fourth reason to stop therapy is that you don't feel a connection with your therapist, whether that's in a virtual or online relationship or with someone while you're in their office. Not all therapists are going to be a good fit for you. For example, I have the reputation of being someone, or so I've been told, that's pretty direct and open. I suggest assignments, or I give assignments. I try to create a very active collaboration with my patient. So hopefully I'm warm and safe, but I'm also going to suggest some things for them to try that might be hard. Again, just like on the podcast, what can you do about it? Now, it's not school. Assignments are suggestions, not rules of engagement. We'll talk together about what did or didn't work for them. But I like for people to feel as if they're moving through something rather than just talking about something. You want to feel emotional movement, mental movement, spiritual movement, physical movement, whatever it is. But again, I'm not everyone's cup of tea, and that's okay. Now, you also might be unhappy with your therapist if you feel like they talk too much about themselves, they don't pay very good attention, they're not on time, whatever it happens to be. It's the therapist's job to create a welcoming environment for you, and if they don't, it's okay to part ways. That's not saying that stopping that work is necessarily easy. So the sooner you figure out or feel, no, this therapist just isn't for me, the better it'll be. Because you won't feel as if you've wasted your time or your money, because that can feel really bad. Now, most therapists won't do a session for free, so you can't kick the tires of the relationship before you start it. But I frequently, if not always, have introductory phone conversations with someone for no fee, so they get a sense of who I am and how it feels to talk with me. If a therapist won't do that, I'd question what they're doing and the way they're doing it. Everybody's got 10 minutes. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Did you know that perimenopause can begin as early as 35 or 40? If you're a woman, you may have experienced subtle hormonal changes much earlier than we used to believe menopause began, and you don't know what to do or where to get really good information. Perimenopause, or the years prior to the time when your body begins to slow down and eventually stop menstruating, it's a natural process, as is menopause itself. But that doesn't mean they don't have their own unique difficulties. Certainly, perimenopause threw me for some emotional loops, and some of those loops can be heavily intertwined with mental and emotional struggles. The good news is you don't have to suffer through it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. That's 50 orders in the time it takes you to listen to Self-Work. Now, for a limited time, you could get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. The next reason to leave therapy is a little more difficult to describe. It's about a growing dependence on your therapist rather than experiencing a healthier gradual decrease in that dependence. Especially if you've come into therapy for treatment of trauma, if you're struggling with a major depressive disorder or severe anxiety disorder, being able to talk about it with a therapist you trust is like finding water in a desert. And it is normal to have a certain amount of initial dependence. The client may feel like they don't know what they do if they weren't in therapy and without you, the therapist. They might even feel worried about something happening that would stop therapy, something happening to you. This feeling, again, is normal and happens frequently. But that dependence should lessen as time goes on because you're learning skills that are yours. You're in a better mental and emotional state where you're handling your life better. Whatever may have seemed totally unbearable has shifted, either through therapy or medication, exercise or meditation, whatever the combination of help you've tried or received, you're becoming stronger, and that's to be celebrated. So if you still feel dependent on your therapist and you've been in therapy a long time, I'd encourage you to look at this dynamic. Maybe talk to your therapist about it, or talk with someone who's also in therapy about their own experience with feeling somewhat dependent and then moving away from that. Because I'll use an obvious analogy. You know, when you learn to ride a bike, you don't need training wheels anymore, and therapy should be the same way. It's not that you don't appreciate the person and maybe even have feelings of caring for them. But in my opinion, the dependence needs to decrease. Virtual or online therapy was a huge asset during the pandemic, and the loosening of state laws about psychologists being able to practice across state lines has been fantastic. But another reason to quit therapy is you may move away from that town or city where your therapist lives and not want to do virtual work. So you can get stuck in the decision between finding a new therapist, which is not always easy, and starting over or taking a break from therapy altogether. Now, I do virtual work, and during the pandemic, I read about many people's feelings that having to come to a therapist's office was trying or expensive or made therapy more difficult. To tell you the truth, I'd never really thought about that. I thought about people with disabilities. I made sure that I had an entrance that was available, but I guess I found such comfort in going to someone's office. It never occurred to me that it might make it more difficult. So I learned during the pandemic that I was making some assumptions that simply weren't true. So at this point, I do virtual work as well as in-office work. But if you move or your therapist moves, then the decision to stick with them as best you can or to shift, hit the pause button on therapy for a while or altogether. So let's talk about one more reason to stop therapy, and it's a practical reason. You can run up a credit card debt doing therapy, which is definitely a problem. I didn't take credit cards for years due to that. Financial debt is something many people hide, and I wouldn't find out about a huge credit card debt until someone had seen me for many sessions and charged their sessions on that same credit card. So I didn't want to be a part of creating more of a problem for my clients than we could talk about money and what they could actually afford. But what has exploded recently are many apps and workbooks that are designed to help you do the work independently. Maybe go in to see a therapist every now and then for extra guidance. I've featured two apps here on self-work lately, a self-hypnosis app called Reverie and another cognitive behavioral app called Feeling Great. And I think either one of those, and there are many, many others, can actually greatly help you to do much of the work yourself. Then maybe ask for help when you get stuck, but you're not running up a terrible debt. So that's some practical advice, some intangible advice about when and how to maybe consider stopping therapy.
Speak pipe message from Dr. Margaret Rutherford.com.
Our listener voicemail this week is a little different. It's from someone who is the primary caregiver for her mother, and she initially began by saying she and her mom were enmeshed. But then she brought up a subject that she said was very hard for her to even hear herself speak the words. What was it? She felt that her mom's illness, which although terminal, didn't mean that her mom was in imminent danger of dying, but she believed that her mom's illness had come from her own mother's self-neglect. Her voice caught a bit as she was talking, and I could feel the pain that she was in. She felt loyal to her mom while also discovering this anger and or resentment toward her for not taking better care of herself. A lot of that daughter's life now involves caring for her mom, and she was asking me if she should try to talk to her mom about creating some kind of boundary, or would that not be useful or helpful? As usual, I don't have the answer that's best, but I do have some ideas for her to consider. First, every caregiving guide I've ever read says you cannot do it all by yourself. So is this daughter the only person available to give her mom the care she needs? If they're enmeshed, as she said, meaning there aren't good boundaries between them, her mom might be saying things like, "No one cares for me like you do," which might only cause her, long-term, the daughter, to grow more resentful. Whether it's a family member or a paid helper, this listener may likely need to set this boundary that she can't be the only one taking care of her mom, because she will burn out. Second, let's look at her feelings of anger or resentment that her mom's illness is connected to her lack of self-care. I don't know if that means she has addictions, or she didn't get any checkups, or she ignored signs of a pending medical problem or mental problem. Maybe having an unaddressed mental or emotional problem that was left untreated could also be part of the picture. So there could be many reasons her self-care was poor. Perhaps inadvertently, but it seems that her mom may have given her the message that she knew her daughter would be left caring for her, but that didn't make a difference to her. And that can be very, very hard to feel. And of course, that brings with it anger and resentment. Third, and the regular listeners of Self-Work have heard me say this before, I think before starting a difficult conversation, you have to assess whether the person you want to talk with actually has the capacity to be a responsible part of that conversation. If not, all the wishing in the world isn't going to bestow upon them the ability to hear your concerns or emotions responsibly. If she's more likely to have some kind of dramatic or reactive response, if she'll feel abandoned or victimized, if she'll feel attacked, then trying to have the conversation is likely not a good idea. Now, if she is capable, maybe you can go for it. What I like to suggest is people make sure that they are introducing the idea that maybe it's time to have kind of a difficult conversation about your decisions about your health, and get her agreement to say something like, "Mom, I'd like us to have what I think is going to be kind of a hard talk, but I'm having some feelings I need to talk with you about. Can you do that?" And if her mother says no, then she'll have to make her own decisions about what to do about those feelings. There's a fourth suggestion. There are lots of caregiver support groups out there. I just Googled caregiver support and 3 or 4 organizations came up. I also, quite a while ago, had a guest on Self-Work, Kathy Sikorsky, who's an elder law attorney, and actually she became one after she'd done so much caregiving, and she's written some excellent books on both the emotional and very practical aspects of caregiving. The link to that episode will be in your show notes. So I certainly hope that those suggestions are ones that will be helpful for you. I know that I have been riveted to my phone or my screen or the news trying to hear about the absolute devastation in LA and what we as Americans or as just caring people can do about it. Please, whatever your means, try to think about something you could do to help these thousands and thousands of people who find themselves without a home. I was looking around my closet this morning and I have a tablet that has a written funny note to my son when he turned 16, signed by both me and his dad, and I just keep it and look at it. It's a sentimental thing. Those are some of the things that you just never will get back. So whatever you can do, please do. If any of you listeners know of some way that I could be helpful, especially if you're in California or in the Los Angeles area, please email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. Again, I'm very grateful that you're here and that you give me the gift of your presence here at Self-Work. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self-Work.